what's the reality when you're not on the mountain? What's the reality when you're in quicksand going down and potentially may not be breathing in 10 minutes, right? Or having anxiety or panicking or feeling hopeless. And for me, through those processes early on, I didn't have faith. I wasn't spiritual. I didn't grow up like that. So I really did feel hopeless. Mm. And I think the only thing for me that pushed me was to push back on it and say, it's not going to defeat me. Mm-hmm. And that's truly how I got through it.
Welcome to the Blessings Podcast, where we explore the twists and turns of life in all its perfect imperfection, so you can see how all kinds of other people are just like you. I am Mitzi Campbell, your life story mentor, a transformational teacher, lifelong educator, college professor with decades of work in education, self-development and psychology, nonprofit leadership, and the arts. I am a flower photographer, a yogi, a knitter, a voracious reader, and a mom of three fantastic grown-ups. And I'm so happy to be your host for this experience of connection, gratitude, blessings, and lessons. We are here to see firsthand that people of all walks of life go through things that are invisible on the outside, and that we just never know what our fellow humans are carrying with them on this crazy journey. So get comfy and let's listen with love, compassion, and an open mind as we ditch the small talk and go deep into discovering others so we can better get to know ourselves. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Blessings. Today, I want to introduce you to Jim Morris out of Nashville, Tennessee. Jim wants to change lives, but not just a few. His goal is to reach over 1 million people with conversations and events about growth and amplification of the things that truly move the needle in life. He recently over-delivered with his Impact Effect 2023 event, which I attended and enjoyed very much. And he emphasizes the power of relationships to fuel success and build character. He has traversed a road with many hills and valleys, and we're going to dig into the details of his life from the beginning until now as he recounts some of those ups and downs and what it takes for those of us who are hungry for positive change in the world to get to where we want to go in life and to help others to do the same. So welcome to the show, Jim.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to share some lessons and hopefully create some impact for your listeners.
Yes. And I'm excited to hear what you have to say, because you always have these nuggets. I've listened to a few interviews with you and you definitely have some great words of wisdom. So we're going to make the most of that. But I want to start off with a big question. I will take you back into your story, but I like to start out with something big to get the wheels really turning. Why do you think that we are here on this planet? What are we here to do?
That's a great question. I'm going to probably go a little deep, so bear with me.
I love it.
But I truly believe that the human capital, the human population, is really on this world to create experiences that are memorable and ultimately equate to the number one emotion of love. For me specifically, I think that's the unifying bond in any relationship. And there's different levels of that. But ultimately, I think that's what continues to push the needle in our lives to give us drive. The compassion, the caring, the relationships, the lessons, the blessings. But really just, we're species and we're on this earth and there can be impact in so many different ways. But I truly believe it's to have this unifying bond with one another, and to truly continue to create impact through that. And I think we can take that down the road of business. We can take that down the road of life. We can take that down the road of spirituality. But for me, strategically, and how I look at all of it in one omnipresence is it really boils down to the unified love of each other. And I do believe that people create opportunity and move people through life based on that unifying bond.
Yeah. I also agree. I think that when I ask people a lot of times what the most important thing is in life, and my answer is always love. A lot of people also see that. And I think that's a kind of a universal truth. It's a big thing. But I love it. I love that answer. Thank you. All right. So let's talk about this. Where were you born?
I was born in Massachusetts.
I saw that you were from Boston. Were you born in the city or outside of there?
I was born in Melrose, right outside the city.
Okay. And so what did your family look like?
My dad had 9 brothers and a sister. So I had a lot of uncles. My mom had a couple siblings and very Irish Bostonian family, which we moved out of the city to Billerica, Massachusetts, and they created our family. And one of the things that probably can relate back to your first question is understanding that unifying bond, especially seeing it with my dad's brothers, my uncles, and my one aunt, of how that really works and how that family bond is created. Now, of course, it wasn't perfect. Of course, there was ups and downs with that many siblings, but I think that's where a lot of the core values started in my immediate family. So mom, dad, 2 half brothers got along very well. And then some life changes occurred as I continued to grow up and get older.
Take us a little bit into your childhood. What was your life like growing up in elementary school age?
It was great. I had very supportive parents. They allowed me to do what I wanted to do. For example, I played sports. Baseball was my thing, but my parents didn't pressure me or push me into any of it. So for me, in those early stages and early years, I really learned a lot of core values of responsibility and respect and teamwork, essentially, by growing up in sports and leadership. And I was pretty good at that age. So it allowed me to travel. It allowed me to have more experiences at a young age. And yeah, I look back at the best years of playing baseball was age 9 to 12.
That is so great. I think we learn a lot from being on a team and learning how to play and interact with others, especially from a young age. It's good that you wanted to continue to do that. I know that, like in my own family, I also never pushed my kids to either stay in something or to join something or to quit something. But a lot of times they would find that it wasn't the right thing for them. Why do you think that you gravitated towards that kind of team environment and wanting to stay there?
Mostly for me specifically, it would be the fact that I truly understood that to accomplish a massive goal, you need help. And it's intricate pieces to get to that common outcome. And that really helped me define a lot of how I've grown as the years progressed, because I've realized in different pockets of my life that it really comes back to teamwork when you're trying to create massive impact and do something larger than you. And to do it alone or to think that you're the only aspect to create that outcome of success, it doesn't work like that. And it's small-minded because you can't actually create massive impact without others and without support and community, essentially.
Interesting. So even from a young age, you felt a calling to something bigger. Is that true?
I would say, yeah. I never wanted to play professional sports. I always wanted to own my own business. I think it really started at a young age with the lemonade shop on the corner of the house. And it's funny, I was telling a story on a podcast recently, and I would go to Dunkin' Donuts and get the little Munchkin donuts, and I would upsell them at the lemonade stand at age 8. And I think for me, my calling was related to, I really want to be a CEO or a founder of a business. But I knew that in order to do that, you really needed a team behind you to accomplish that massive goal. So as I progressed through life, I always built great teams in any corporate role that I had growing up. But I always had this desire and this burn in my heart to create my own team, create my own company and my own product or service. So I think ultimately it really boils back down to the calling was probably to start my own thing, but understanding the reason why is because I knew that I could formulate a team and lead a team and they could count on me just as much as I needed to count on them.
Who taught you that?
I think for me, the aspect of playing sports started that. And then the aspect of my parents becoming addicted to OxyContin had pushed me to build a team of friends. And that was truly my family. So as I progressed and got older, I really came back to those same attributes and skill sets, but really just maneuvered them differently through life as I faced different challenges. And even what you had mentioned with Impact Effect 23, the conference, what I realized through that process was, again, the same exact thing. As far as if I can create impact, I need a team around me to help. And as I continue to progress, because that event was my vision, it was really all up here, I really want to continue to build out a bigger team as we do this year over year, because I really do want to see people grow and be part of it. We lost a couple team members through the process that weren't full-time because they had other objectives and their full-time job took them in that route. But through that process, I held on to those folks because I wanted them to be part of this. Mm. I didn't want this to be a Jim Morris show. Mm. And I wanted them to feel the success after the event. So that was really important to me. And I think that's really important to me as I go through different ventures, create different services and products, and continue to help and serve our communities.
And I know that relationships is a big focus for you. And as I was going through your notes and information, my first thought was, I wonder why that is. So let's talk about what you just said about your parents.
That's really what it comes down to.
An addiction. Is that what you're telling me? Okay. So can you tell us like what happened? Both of them were addicted to OxyContin?
Yeah. So my dad worked for the electric company. He was climbing a telephone pole, fixing a transformer, fell down the pole and broke both of his knees. Blue collar worker, got prescribed OxyContin as the pain conduit to the solution. Became fully addicted to that. About 6 months later, my mom had half of her lung removed because she had cancer, and they prescribed her OxyContin for the pain. So through that process, when you give an opioid to someone, it becomes a massive addiction. And when you can't fill the prescription, it leads to other sources. And ultimately, I had to suffer through that and at an early age of 14. And I believe relationships are so powerful and meaningful to me because I was forced to go create my own family. And it's not that my parents, and this is what I always tell everybody, it's not that my parents weren't instilling the right core values. It's not that they were absent and not around and doing drugs on the street. I still had a roof over my head, although we moved 18 times before I graduated high school. But what really hurt me through that process was the fact that although my parents were telling me all the right things to do, they were ultimately lying to me. And they were lying to me for my own benefit, essentially. But what that did was it caused so much trauma in my life as I progressed and pushed me away. And I didn't really have anybody to handle that emotion and that trauma. So I resourcefully went to friends. Mm-hmm. And as you can think, a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old isn't going to be able to advise or help you through those traumas in real time. So there was a period of time where I felt alone. I felt that I didn't have any resources. I asked why this happened to me. And I really became a victim. And it took some time to really get out of that process. And that's why I like to talk through that, are you a victim or victor concept, because I actually had to live through it. And the relationships are so important to me because in my darkest days, although that 14, 15-year-old who was my friend couldn't address my trauma from a psychological standpoint and really understand it, they were still there for me. There was a point in time where I lived with a friend for 6 months at his house and his parents' house because we were 16.
Yeah. So how long did that time of your life last from when your parents were going through that?
So 14, it occurred. I moved out at 20 because they stole all my savings that I've been saving up in cash from me. And that's also when I was going to college. It was time to get my own place anyway. After that, my dad passed away and it really fractured the relationship with my mom. Now we actually have a great relationship. My mom was here for the conference. I flew her into town. She's coming back for Christmas. So it's really progressed, but ultimately through that process, there was never anybody to lean on for advice, because after understanding that it was a lie because they weren't doing what they were advising, I really distanced myself from any advice or resource that they would be there for me, essentially. So it felt pretty lonely.
I can imagine. That's a tough time. How old were you when your dad passed?
I was 24. 22, sorry.
Oh, 22. Wow.
22.
And he had not recovered when he passed.
Correct.
Okay.
And also, mom,
yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I believe my dad killed himself. And that's not openly discussed even today with my mom. So I'm still trying to work through having that conversation, because he just passed in his sleep and they said his sugar was low. But I had this thought that wasn't true. And I had talked to my brother and he actually was like, yeah, that's not what happened. And no one really talked about it. So it's still a theory, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened, because a week prior, he upped his life insurance to the maximum. And he was also losing his job at that time. He was being investigated by the union. And we had met for dinner two nights before. And I had asked, oh, was mom coming? And he was like, oh, she's not feeling well. It's just going to be us. So as I look back and put those clues together, I'm pretty sure I understand what the reality was, especially with conversing with my brother 3 years later and having that conversation and him saying, yeah, I feel the same way. So that's something still we're working on, right? As I progress and I age and continue to build that relationship with my mother. But ultimately, it was a hard time. It was, and through that process, I drank a lot of alcohol to get through it. And now today, I can proudly say I haven't had a sip of alcohol in over a year. But to get through those periods, I really needed the resources of relationships, and really needed people to pour into me when I was at my low. And I was just so inside the picture frame that I couldn't see the picture. Yeah. So I really didn't know even to ask or how to ask for help, because I was just on a daily basis trying to reduce the trauma and the stress around it.
Mm. And even as you talk about that, you're smiling. Why do you think that is?
Because I'm good with it. I've done the work in the last couple of years. This is still a new topic for me. Yeah. The first time my mom seen me speak on stage was only 4 months ago. And that was a great moment. And I was honest and talked a little bit about those experiences. And I'm smiling because I'm glad I spent the time and utilized the resources to put myself in a position of identifying what was good for me and what was bad for me. And through that process, amazing things have happened. I met my wife, I've got a 1-year-old. She's sick this week and has had a 103 temp for 5 days. We're going to get through that. And she's a ball of joy and she's my why.
Wow. All right. Just, I want to acknowledge you for sharing that. That was extremely vulnerable. So thanks for sharing that. It's something when you have to look at your parents and realize that they are just as human as you are.
I think for me early on, I felt like I was the parent, and that created a lot of anger. Yes. And I didn't know how to handle that anger. So I was telling a friend last night, he was talking about his days in high school and how it was crazy. And I said, my days in high school were crazy too. I got beat up a lot and I got into a lot of fights. And the reason why is because I didn't know how to control the situation that I was in. And I utilized that as an outlet for physical pain. Like I got in a lot of these fist fights, but I didn't win them. My whole senior year of high school, I had a black and bloody eye every single day. I graduated prom with a black and bloody eye. When I look back on those times, and all that really does today for me is equate to the fact that in those times of distress, in those times of loneliness, when you feel like you're ultimately and completely beaten down and you have no resources and you just feel like giving up and you are the victim in that moment. You put yourself in that victim moment. You really do need meaningful relationships to pull you out of those dark days. And that's ultimately why I believe so much in relationships, because it's a great and an awesome moment when you're on top of the mountain and you're celebrating and people are there celebrating with you. And it's amazing, right? Because it amplifies that and you're like, wow, I feel great. But that's the highlight reel. That's what like the highlight reel on social media is, right?
Yeah.
What's the reality when you're not on the mountain? What's the reality when you're in quicksand going down and potentially may not be breathing in 10 minutes, right? Or having anxiety or panicking or feeling hopeless. And for me, through those processes early on, I didn't have faith. I wasn't spiritual. I didn't grow up like that. So I really did feel hopeless. And I think the only thing for me that pushed me was to push back on it and say, it's not going to defeat me. Mm-hmm. And that's truly how I got through it.
Yeah. So it strikes me like you fought your way through it, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, that's a good analysis. 100%. Yes. Yes.
Would you say you were bullied in high school?
I wouldn't say I was bullied in high school. I would just say that I had a smart mouth.
Okay.
And was taking out my anger, loneliness on others in a way. So I was the gentleman who, when someone was bullying you, I would interfere and I'd get beat up.
Okay.
And I wasn't perfect. I'm sure I said some things that hurt others through high school and whatnot, but I wouldn't consider myself a bully and I wouldn't consider myself bullied. I would consider myself someone who was really angry and didn't have an outlet and bottled everything up. The culture I grew up in Boston, you were made fun of. You were like, if you talked about emotions, if you talked about this, you were considered a wimp or a baby. And so I didn't really have an outlet for that specific thing, but I did have people close enough to me that I could talk to, but the persona and the culture wasn't conducive for me to open up around everybody like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that was the same for other people around you? Was that kind of a male characteristic of the males in your life? Or was it also, you think, just the Boston thing, females and males?
I think it was probably the males.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it was much more masculine energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that you had these brothers and your dad had all of the male siblings. So it's all, you didn't have a lot of female feminine energy.
And I characterized back my heavy drinking to that. All my uncles were heavy drinkers. It was fully accepted. My parents drank a lot in the early days before they became addicted to OxyContin. That really slowed down the drinking because it was really just zombie phase at that point when you're just dosed up on pain meds all day.
Yeah.
So I would say that a lot of it came from that flow of family culture.
Yeah.
But also there was an advisement of who I was hanging out with at a young age. I was hanging out with older people as well, which can get you into different situations and scenarios. It was an interesting several years to navigate. And as I look back on it, I learned a lot of lessons through it, but the lessons learned were through me taking the wrong route, the wrong action, and having no guidance.
Yeah, but it's amazing that you have come through it and learned from it rather than letting it take you down.
It took a while. The Jim Morris today on this screen was not the Jim Morris 2.5 years ago. This is a pretty new phase for my life. I was trying to live to 30 years old. That was my goal in my 20s. I never thought I'd get married. I never thought I'd have kids, although I wanted them. And I sought relationships that I thought would be conducive to that. But in retrospect and analyzation, I was not seeking the right relationships and I was not over the trauma and I was not in a place of giving. I was in a place of reclusiveness and hurt and growing up without money, having the bowl of cereal with water, not milk, put me in a position in my 20s to put a dollar bill over everything.
Mm-hmm.
I will, and I remember in like junior year of high school on my MySpace writing, you have to hit the rock bottom to truly understand. And today that phrase means so much more, and it's so different than what it meant to me in my teens and then 20s. But at that time, it was like I had to see life in my thought process. I had to see life without money to then put myself in a position. Everything was to make sure I would never have that happen to me again or my family. And even through now, where I feel like I'm out of that and I feel like I'm healed, not fully, because I do think trauma is always a work in progress and there's triggers and there's reality behind those thoughts and they come in sometimes and whatnot. But through that process, what I realized was I put money over everything. And because I just didn't want to be in that situation I was. Mm-hmm. And even with Impact Effect 23 as a major investment into my brand and my community and other entrepreneurs, through that process, I still felt a certain restriction because I was investing so much into an idea, right? There was no playbook that someone gave me on how to throw this conference. There was no school I went to. There was no class. So this was a true culmination of my thoughts on how I could impact others. Mm-hmm. And because it was new and I didn't have massive experience and I've never thrown a massive conference like that before, there still was some of those triggers that came up as far as, wow, I feel like when I didn't have money, I feel like, because as the bank account goes, when you pay out the bills before you sell the tickets, it's heavy on the expense side before you even see a dollar, right? Because as people don't buy tickets a year in advance, right, especially if it's year one.
Yeah.
So through that process, I still felt that kind of come up again as I seen the numbers lower. So I had to work through the fact that my life isn't surrounded around a green piece of paper. And so as I say that, you could probably see me trying to center a little bit here because even saying that, it rises some cortisol, right? Because although I understand it, there's still a reality sometimes that is real when that bank account goes down low and you're investing in someone before you see that return. So it brought back a little bit of those early day memories. So I'm continuously trying to improve and progress through that.
Yeah. 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 I think the first thing I noticed at the event itself was the expense you must have put in to put that on. I was this is no joke. You had an amazing venue. I'm sure that wasn't cheap. The food, the speakers that you had, the attention to detail and the setup and everything. It was very well done. I've put on some major events in my day as well. And so I know what goes into that. It is enormous. So yeah. So kudos. That was fantastic. And I know it's an investment in yourself. Yes. It's not just about the event. It's about building something and starting a phenomenon. So you could see that. I think that came across in the energy. So tell me, what did you go to college for?
I went to college for business. So I just got a business admin degree and concentration in leadership and entrepreneurship.
So that sort of set the stage. And how did you get to college with such a difficult time going on in your life? Like, how did you actually manage to get into college and make it happen?
It's a great question. And I'm thankful for you asking me that because this was a very pivotal point in my life. And I do believe if I didn't make the extra effort and to push through the situation and scenario, I probably wouldn't be where I'm sitting today having this conversation with you. And I recognize that. And that's very real. Through the process, my parents made too much money for me to get any financial aid. Although we didn't have money, they were making it and it was being spent. So that was tough to go to your parent after you get out of the guidance counselor office and they're like telling you what to do to get into college. And they're like, we have no money. So I was the first one. My brothers are older. So I was the first one to go to college. My oldest brother went to community college for a semester and my grandmother paid for it. So there wasn't really, the process hasn't been lived through prior. In that process, I was getting a scholarship for baseball. college I was going to was $40,000 a year, and they were going to give me a full boat. 3 weeks before that, they said, hey, we can only give you $35,000 out of the $40,000. And I said, okay, great. No big deal. Went back to mom and dad, and they said, we don't have the money. So I actually had to pass on that scholarship. So through that, I sat down with myself and I said, I've got all these friends that are a couple of years older than me. I see what they're doing. They didn't go to college. They're roofing houses. They're framing houses. And in that time, from senior year summers, I was doing masonry just to make cash during the summer. So I seen that side of it. And I seen all my friends in the trades industry. And I just said, I don't want to live in my hometown and roof houses. And that was the trajectory in the path. Not that there's anything wrong with roofing houses, but if you remember at a young age, I really wanted to own my own business. And I really liked the business side of it. I didn't necessarily want the trade side of it. I wanted to create. I wanted to bring product and service into the world. Yeah, I was in a position where I didn't know what to do. And I went down, there was a community college in my hometown. And I went down to the community college and did the whole process. And they said, sorry, the semester's already started. We're 4 weeks in. You're going to have to go next semester. And I sat down and I looked at the woman and I leaned in a little bit. And I said, if I don't get in to this semester, I'm never going to go to college. Like it's just never going to happen. I'm going to have to go work to make money, and I'm not going to come back to college. I'm just going to go that path. And she had to get some approvals, this and that, but I ended up talking my way into them taking me. I ended up getting great grades and then transferring to University of Massachusetts, Boston, and getting my bachelor's.
That's great.
So it was a journey. It was a journey.
Yeah, but there are ways to make it happen. And I like that you had that drive and that you're talking about it, because there are ways around. You don't always have to follow the traditional path.
And I think for me, that was really the major aspect in my life that has allowed me to truly live and embody the fact that there's always a third way in every single situation. There is always a third way.
At least a third. There could be many other ways.
Yeah. So don't stop, right? If you hit the roadblock going left, go right. You hit the roadblock going right, try a 45-degree angle. Try going down the middle.
Yep.
Hell, throw it in reverse. I think that determination and just true understanding of what the reality would have been if that didn't happen had pushed me to not give up and continue to seek that process until I could make it happen.
Yeah, I love that. I want to ask you some important questions, but before that, I just want to reframe a little bit in your childhood. I want to know if you can come up with a joyful or positive, happy memory from that time that we can leave that part of your life on.
Yeah. What I was saying with my parents instilling core values into me through that process, like that's, I don't often hear that when I've had conversations about other people going through situations where their parents may not have been around or addicted or alcoholics. I don't see that is often something that comes up. So I'm just very grateful for that. Like my parents really did teach me life skills and responsibility. And I'm grateful for that, because although they were addicted, although financially things were a struggle, although resources and enterprising came to a halt for me and my future, they did instill the core values that I live by today. And as I continue being a parent and I'm 1 year in, I often think of one scenario with my dad. When he was not fully addicted and I was 9, 10, 11, 12, even 13, 14, that period of 14 probably changed a little bit. I would wait for him to come home from work after school, and every single day he played baseball with me in the backyard, every single day. And I knew he was tired, and I knew my dad worked overtime because for him to make what he needed to provide for our family, he had to work overtime. So my dad would work nights and get a triple rate. And when there were snowstorms up north, he'd go up to Maine and New Hampshire, and they'd bring him in from Massachusetts. He'd get paid lots of money, go away for a week, fix the telephone poles, get electricity in people's homes. So I knew he was tired. I knew he worked a lot, but still he got up and he did that, and it made a massive impact in my life. And it's also given me the value that although I may be tired after work, although I may just get in from a red eye from LA after a speaking gig back to Nashville, I still need to show up for my daughter. And I still need to be a hero at home, not just in my line of work.
Being a hero at home. I love that. Oh, all right. Thank you. That's fantastic.
I couldn't leave it all on the
negative stuff. So I want to touch a little bit on the sobriety and the alcohol. So I had about a year and a half ago, a health issue come up, and I had to change my entire life because of that. And I didn't realize how much alcohol was impacting my life until I cut it out of my life. And now I look back and I even look at pictures of myself when I was drunk and think about friends I had at that time, which I no longer have because I've changed my life, and about how they look posting things online drunk. And you don't realize what you look like, you know, and what you're doing and how it's impacting you. And not that I wouldn't have called myself an alcoholic by any stretch, but it is a very negative influence on your life and you don't even know it. And I would say that no holds barred. I think that's across the board now that I don't drink. I don't want to sound like self-righteous because I don't care if people are drinking. I think it's something that's totally fine if people are into that and it's in moderation or whatever, but it does affect you even if you're doing it in moderation. It's affecting your behavior, the way you're acting. It's making you sick, literally, because waking up not feeling well isn't normal.
Yep. Yep.
So how was it? Let's just talk about like how it was impacting your life and when you realized that you had to leave it behind.
So I would say the understanding for me was, I can do this. I can handle this. I'm strong enough. I'm big enough. I'm brave enough. I got this. That takes down other people. Doesn't affect me. My job's great. I'm getting promoted every year. I'm getting $20,000-$30,000 bonuses. This is no big deal. I'm not that person. Mm. Right? Everything's good. But the fact of the matter was, I was absolutely destroying my health. I was 60 pounds heavier than what I am today.
Wow.
I can't even fit in suit jackets. I have a whole closet full of suit jackets. When I worked in corporate, I can't fit in any of them. They're too big. My relationships weren't relationships. My relationships were drinking buddies who were never going to be there for me and forgot half of our conversations the night before. And for me, I started becoming the person that forgot the conversations the night before. So what it was doing, it was hurting my character, and I didn't even know it because I didn't even realize it. The other thing that was happening, I joke a lot. I will crack a joke. And when I was drinking, I wouldn't understand the room or the perception well enough. People were like, "You were a jerk to that person." I was like, "Oh, dude, I was totally joking. You didn't say you were joking. You didn't sound like it." And I was like, "Oh my God." So what I started to realize was, and the how I normalized this was, I was doing a lot of business while drinking.
Mm.
Oh, this is part of business. Everybody drinks. Everybody wants to go get a cocktail. Everybody wants to do this. Everybody wants to get drunk. Oh, and I'm selling this product and this service and making this relationship. And it was fun. I was having fun. But the reality of it was, all I was doing was just making myself tired and dragging and not operating. And the reality of what made the most sense for me, I was giving so much time to a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, once you open that bottle, you're shot. You're done. Your night's done.
Hey, I'm not writing emails. I'm not strategizing. Okay. I tell everybody the power of the shower. Like, I have my best ideas in the shower, even at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night before bed. And I was like, now I look at it and I'm like, I would have had another 10 years of great ideas when I had that lone, when you're alone and you're in the relaxed state, and you got the warm water on you and you're just hanging out. Like that's where I ideate at a high level.
Yeah.
So I lost that because I was drinking. I lost the time spent. And what I realized was the people who I was doing deals with were alcoholics too.
Right.
It was just selling to the other drunks.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. Not conducive to long-term relationships. That's not conducive to massive business growth. It satisfied the needle to a point, but I had to grow out of that. The other piece was truly because I was having a child and I did not want my child to see me consuming alcohol. I just don't. And I didn't want to be in a different state ever around her. She deserves the real Jim Morris. She deserves the clarity. She deserves understanding and being present in every aspect and conversation. And I owe that to her because I want her to have a great life. I want her to have opportunity. And I didn't get that in my teen years. That was very important and pivotal to most people. Now, I can't say if I did get that where I'd be or whatnot. I'm not going to speculate on any of that. But the reality of it is I know I didn't get that. And I needed to stop it now before she was even conceived.
Okay. I love it. A couple of things. One, your moniker online, the real Jim Morris, just took on a whole new meaning for me because it's not an ego statement. It is a statement of authenticity. It's a reminder to yourself of who you want to be. So yep, I love that. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then what you said about how these were not real relationships, these were just drinking buddies. That really hits home for me because I had what I thought were friendships. And when they ended, because I did change, even before I stopped drinking, I was in the process of changing in my life and my work and everything else. And that's interesting to think about that because when relationships are not genuine, they will tend to naturally fizzle out. And eventually you'll realize that they're not authentic. So, yeah. So your thing about relationships being so important, how do you cultivate authentic relationships? And also, how can people notice when people are trying to connect with them in order to just get something rather than being an authentic connection? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think for me, it's really trying to understand what someone's trying to do in life. What's their dreams? What's their aspirations? What's the why behind it? What's the one big thing you're working on? What's important to you? So as I can continue to navigate those types of questions, I look at it from a sales perspective, right? Because the first is step in sales is discovery. And you typically ask questions to understand where someone's at, to see if you can help or serve them. But here's the difference between the sales process and the relationship process. I'm trying to create human capital, not monetary capital. So although I use somewhat of a similar structure of asking questions out of curiosity, it's not to sell something. Yeah. It's the curiosity to create the human capital of a relationship. And through that process, I think it's very interesting because your original question was, can you understand if someone's trying to sell you something? When you ask those questions and it relates back to a whole term life policy, then I understand that you're trying to sell me insurance, right? So for me, it's a qualifier of connection and core value. When I ask those questions, I start to understand what your core value is. I start to understand if there's alignment. I start to understand if you have a servant heart, why you're doing this. And it's okay to sell life insurance. I'm not saying that's a negative thing, but if we progress through that and it's all about the next deal or next sale, and it's not about, I just want to help people so on their worst day of their life, they have a resource moving forward. And when you ask someone and you get deep into that conversation, you really understand why they're doing it. And the crazy thing is a lot of people can't answer that question. What's your big goal? What are you working towards in life? What are your dreams? Who do you want to help? Who are you trying to serve? And I can quickly identify the level of servant leadership or the level of why they do it and if it's for the right reasons based on their answer. Mm-hmm. Because if once you continue to ask those questions, you start to understand the patterns. And I can identify and know very easily that this person is just building a relationship to sell me something.
Yeah.
Because they're not going deep with me. Right. And it's fine if you don't want to go deep and it's a new relationship. But I think for me, it's really trying to understand that authenticity is what is the purpose. And one of the things that I think is very evident and happens very often is you have those conversations, you somewhat align, and then the next day they text you and try to sell you something.
Yeah.
Now that right there is my disqualifier. If you're going to sell me a product, try and sell it to me face to face if we're going to meet.
Right.
And if that's the route, then I understand where we're at and that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. It's funny. I just did a presentation for a real estate company and this was the topic, small talk versus deep talk and authenticity and the power of authenticity and how it can amplify your sales. And really, because everybody knows what it feels like when someone is being fake and when the question doesn't match the situation. I use the example of being in the salon getting my lip waxed and you got this woman smearing hot wax and she's in my face and I'm just waiting for her to rip it off. And she says to me, "So do you have any plans for the weekend?" And I'm like, small talk, it's canceled. No,
yeah,
no small talk. I think that's really important when you're talking about relationships is really coming from a place of authenticity. And when you are doing it, because it's a part of your job as a salesperson, there's nothing wrong with that. But you have to really believe, like you said, that what you're selling is going to help them moving forward. Okay.
I think it starts with that qualifying, the questions and the curiosity, right? Because how do I know if you need this?
Right.
Or how do I know if I can help you? I'm just making an assumption up front. And that doesn't feel honest, true, or purposeful for the right reason sometimes.
So true. So true. So how do you maintain your authenticity as a father?
I've made mistakes, a lot of them. I often continue to make mistakes. And I just want to talk through that when my daughter's old enough to realize and have a conversation with me. So right now in the period that I'm at, because she's only one, I have a document in my phone where I do put down some of the mistakes I've made, some of the lessons. And then also in that same document on my notepad, I have a document that's titled Ellie Will Be Like Dot. And I just go through and there's about 85 things on that net right now. And I'm manifesting that she will be like this and she will be like that and she will be respectful. And when she makes a mistake, she will fall on the sword and apologize and she won't avoid conflict for the right reasons and she will avoid it for the right reasons. And she should always respect her mother because she conceived her and she has given up so much for the success of her daughter. And so I've just got this list that I've created and I'm just waiting for the moment to be able to have those higher level conversations. But I think for me, when my wife was pregnant, I really went into this panic mode of, I really need to figure out what's extremely important for me to advise and grow her the right way. And that's when I created that document. And in that document, I realized that I wasn't half of the things I wanted her to be.
Mm.
And in that moment is when I made these life changes. And it was actually, it's a crazy story, actually. I left the conference in Long Beach, California. I was walking down the street. I was by myself. It was late at night, dark. I was hungry. And I was just consuming what I heard all day in my head and playing it over and just walking. And I thought, the first thought was, okay, I need to make this list. Ellie will be like, and I'm just writing and I'm texting and I'm walking and I'm hungry. And I look over and there's this small boutique Italian restaurant called Ellie's. And it's packed. So I go up and I'm like, can I grab a seat? It's just me, right? I put my little sales pitch on. It's just me. I'm not from here. And they're like, oh, you have a seat right here. Place is packed. People waiting in lines. And I sit down. And I, still to this day, I'm laughing because I can only imagine what other people thought of me, but I'm sitting down and I'm writing this Ellie will be like list. And I've got this amazing platter of food and I'm just bawling my eyes out crying. And it's like filling up my bowl of food. And I'm just like, I'm writing this. But that was such a pivotal moment. And that's what really transformed my life. The next day, I went through all the negative things I was doing and I changed a lot of them, and I'm still progressing and I'm still working on that list. Don't get me wrong. I'm not perfect. I don't think anybody is, but that ignited the transformation for me. That ignited the reinvention of GM. That ignited me boiling it down to the reality of who do I want my daughter to be? And if I'm going to be the real Jim Morris, I need to be that for her. I'm excited because I'm not at the stage where I feel like I can impact and have deep conversation, right? Because she's only one.
Yeah.
But I'm still building for those moments and I'm still working on myself at a high pace, I think, for my own situation.
And you're not very old. You're like a spring chicken. You're, how old are you?
34. I just turned 34.
Yeah. All right. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I love that. You have a lot of really wise insights. And when I was 33, I wasn't thinking about those things at all. I was thinking about having babies. I was thinking about having a family. And actually at that time, I was going through a difficult time with my mom, who was going through an episode of depression. And then she ended up, unfortunately, passing away a couple of years later. So it was a difficult time. So it's taken me a little bit longer to get to the place where you are now. So I'm really happy and excited for you that you're there. Can you tell us what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned in your life?
The biggest lessons I've learned in my life: ask others for help. That was something that I'm still struggling with. I was really bad at it. I would just go in a silo and just kill myself when there was such an easier way. Mm-hmm. There was such an easier path. I didn't have to learn the lessons the hard way. So I think, and again, this definitely relates to the culture I grew up in, right? Like, I can do it on my own. All that masculine energy. You're a baby. You're a wimp if you can't. That's not the truth. That is not the truth. I define that situation as false. I think the truth is you should enterprise. You should ask for help. You should be resourceful. And it's not a stature of weakness. It's actually a superpower.
Yep.
Because if you can get the right people for the right reason involved in what you're doing, or what, or you involved in what others are doing, it doesn't matter who quarterbacks it, but there's so much power in that collaboration, right? There's so much amplification through that process. So that's probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned is, although I want to run solo sometimes and I want to be the strong Jim Morris, the reality of it is I'm only going to get so far.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a lesson. And in your darkest days, or if you're struggling with something, reach out to folks because they actually do want to help you. People actually want to help you and they want to be part of that transformation, transition, success story, because that's what drives them if they're a servant leader or a big-hearted person, right? Because that's what fills their cup. And that's why I'm in, I think, a position I'm in today where I advise and consult and really get in the weeds with businesses to help people grow, because I want to. That's what fills my cup.
Yeah, because people who are healing want to heal others. They know how great 100%. That feels.
100%.
And I love what you said about collaboration, because in the beginning, you talked about the love being the most important thing. And for us, that's why we're here, basically. And collaboration is love energy. Fighting is not love energy. That's fear energy.
Yep. 100%.
And so building from a place of love rather than a place of fear. Yeah.
Yes.
I love that.
Yep.
What about your blessings? What's your biggest set of blessings, the things you're most grateful for?
My wife. My wife is so supportive, you know, in my aspirations and my dreams. Before I started speaking and traveling a lot, I went to her and I asked her, hey, this is what I really want to do and this is why. I feel the best coming off a stage because I feel that there's true impact. It's relationship building. I let people a little bit into my heart, my story. And if they're gravitated towards that, I feel like that's a very impactful opportunity for me to guide or help others. And she said, if that's important to you, then it's important to me. You know, with the conference, you know, she saw the blood, sweat, and tears. She was there to support. There was conversations where I had to move money and some real estate investments didn't pan out the way they thought. We had to have some 11 o'clock at night dinner table conversations with tears and concerns. And so I think for her to marry me with one assumption and me completely transform and transition is, she probably will say that's a good thing for her, right? Because I've, in my opinion, I've weeded out a lot of the negative things I was doing, but I also know that's not what she essentially signed up for. And she has given me the opportunity to do things that I truly feel my calling, and she's there to support me. And she's an entrepreneur as well. She owns her own company. She's a chiropractor and she's a mom, and she, the baby stays home with her. So she's just doing a lot. And I never thought I would meet a woman that I love so much. I never thought I would meet a woman that supports me in this way. And my biggest fear of getting married throughout my whole life was I would marry the wrong person, and that person would try to push me into something that I'm not. And she does not do that. She allows me to be me, and she will correct me when I make a mistake, but it's in a way of love, and it's a collaborative conversation. It's not a, you did this, or you should do that, and you shouldn't do, like, it's none of that. It's just, and I'm just, I never thought it would be this great. So it's truly been a blessing. It's when I said to her, hey, I know you may want a large wedding, but I want to talk through that. We can definitely do it. And her saying, why don't you spend that money on an investment property? I was like, I think we align in way more ways than I ever knew.
Wow. Yeah. She sounds like an amazing woman. And especially since she knows all the parts of you, she knows who you were before, she knows who you are now, and she's probably super excited to get to know the person who you're going to be. Beautiful. Okay. Thank you, Jim. You have just left me a little bit better than you found me. And that is my goal on the show, for people to experience themselves as having been left better for having listened to the show. So thank you. And I'm grateful for you to have been here today. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I'm grateful for you, and I look forward to continuing our relationship, and I hope I made an impact for your listeners today.
If you've gotten to the end of this episode, I know that you are one of my loyal listeners, and you probably already know this, but the impact of other people's stories in our lives is profound and powerful. And I want to read you some feedback that I got from Dash, whose story I shared at the beginning of season 2. He received this note and he shared it with me. Hi Dash, we met years ago in Santa Fe when you treated me to a wonderful lunch. I just finished listening to your interview on Blessins and I had to reach out. My mixed feelings right now include inspiration, joy, and a deep gratitude to you for sharing your incredible life and its lessons. I also feel a sadness that I did not get to know you better when I was in Santa Fe. You embody grace and a loving humor that I imagine enfolds everyone you meet. And boy, what an exciting life. I'm actually getting choked up reading that, because when I get feedback like this, it's hard for me to even describe the feelings that come up. It's a mixture of happiness, pride, and tremendous gratitude. It keeps me going. But most of all, it reminds me that I am putting something meaningful out there into the world, something that the world needs. So thank you to all of my listeners and to all of the people who have blessed me with their stories. I know that I'm doing the right thing. Thank you for keeping me on track.